Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
That happened in the commercial break. So what you're looking at photographs right now of Michael Waltz. He is the president's national security advisor, except for we just got news that he is going to be leaving the administration along with his deputy, Alex Wong. Of course, if you might remember the story of Signalgate. I don't know if that's a particular reason, but there was some consternation among some people about Mike Waltz, who you might remember was a congressman, Green Beret, a long history and career in foreign policy. And I believe
So Mike Waltz out as the national security advisor. Remember, this is one of those seats that we lost when we appointed somebody out of Congress, a Republican out of Congress, had to wait for a special election to take place. That guy is now out of the administration, 101 days in. Isn't that something? Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. It's great to be with you here today. I remember hearing when the signal gate started, when those text messages came out, there was I want to say that it might have like come out of the war room crew about the question marks that surrounded former Representative Mike Waltz, now National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, no longer National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, that maybe there was some reason to have less trust in him. I'm interested to find out more. We'll get more reaction from folks throughout the course of the show as to why this maneuver was made, because you could get... You could be fired or removed or whatever the situation, whatever the name is for it. You could be removed because you made a big enough mistake to get removed. And you could be removed because you're not trustworthy. There's a big difference between, in my mind, of looking at somebody and saying, wow, you made a big mistake. And, oh, you were trying to sabotage the administration because you thought something should be one way when the administration thought it should be the other. So that's the kind of the big news of the day. The president was speaking at the White House earlier regarding the National Day of Prayer, and if that was on while we were on, I'd probably carry it. But I got to be honest, I'm just going to give my straight up honest opinion about it. If you're going to have a National Day of Prayer, I want it to focus on God, not on man. And that's not what happened. They got there eventually, but it was a little unsatisfying for me. I was like, separation of church and state. Go back to that. Just for now, at least.
Just for an afternoon.
This is not the strong suit for President Trump. I do believe that he has faith. I don't believe that I have the right to judge his faith. But I don't think that, you know, when Mike Pence was there, I think he was there partly to be able to represent Midwestern values. He comes from Indiana to represent a faith community. He is very outspoken about his faith. I appreciated that about him. You're in a position where you can represent those things and put your best foot forward. And while I can't judge the quality of anybody in the administration's faith, if it's not your best foot forward, key in on that and do what's best. Did you listen to any of it?
Very little. From what I heard, I like that they were saying, look, the religious freedom is going to be front and center here. We're going to not only protect that, we're going to advance that. That's policy. So I thought that was good.
How do you advance religious freedom? You just get the heck out of the way?
I think so.
I mean, you can't.
Unless you're the Supreme Court, you're not really.
Well, I mean, we have it. It's in the First Amendment. I mean, that was numero uno on the list of God-given rights. And so to me, it's like the only thing that the government can do is get in the way. Your rights are yours. They came from God. They don't come from government. And it's important to highlight that, because if government gives you your rights, they can remove your rights. They can regulate those rights. They can lessen those rights. The National Day of Prayer is an important thing. I think it's good that he's there. I just don't think that listing off your accomplishments for the administration in the 100 days with a captive audience is the right time to talk about, man. Like, I would like to have heard at the beginning of his prayer ceremony, if it was going to be about President Trump, I would like to hear about his faith journey. I would like to hear about his brush with death and a bullet, because he's correlated that with his faith on multiple occasions. So I don't think it would be out of the ordinary to have that conversation. I just don't think it's time to, like, I don't know, do the normal Trump thing, which I am okay. I love the normal Trump thing. But if you're going to talk about something to me that far trumps the Trump thing, it's our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
It did feel like a weird environment to spike a football, especially when you're 100 days in. A lot of what they're doing, like you said, is just saying the persecution of Christians, whether it be of Catholics from the IRS and all the, you know, these random things. We're not doing that. Okay, that's good that you're not doing that. But that also means that was day one you were not doing that. There's not really a lot else to say.
The other thing is I don't look to my government, kind of to the point before about like furthering religious freedom. I don't look to my government to further religious freedom. That's mine. I don't need them. I don't know if you weren't quoting him. You were just saying that.
No, it wasn't a quote.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to hold him accountable for that if I heard you say that and it was your words and not his. I think that the success and the value of what he has to offer is how faith has guided him. And this is, you know, again, I like the Trump thing. I don't have any problem with him using the word Trump when he talks about himself. That doesn't bother me 98% of the time. But in this conversation, it's got to be about something. It's got to be about something else.
Trump is uniquely authentic. And when anybody around him is not being authentic, it does stand out a little bit. I'm not saying that that's what today was, but Trump doesn't speak about this a lot.
Speak about what?
Religion, about his faith. He does very generally. He does somewhat specifically about the shot to the ear. And that's where he goes with it.
Usually when prompted too.
Yeah.
I think it's a really personal thing, which is why I wish that would have been the focus for today. And you know what? The paper or the teleprompter in front of him might have been focused on that. And then he gets to do what he wants. I elected him. I regret nothing. I'm sure many people listening have those same thoughts. In addition to that, there's also yet another press briefing, and this is one I wish I could have been there for. Not that I regret anything. Tom Homan talking about national security with the border and with immigration and deportations, and then Scott Bessent talking about the economy. These are the things that you need an administration that knows what they're doing to come in and get to right away. But today's was framed as the press briefing on the 100 days of bringing back common sense. And I'm like, let's lean into that.
Last night, we saw yet again why President Trump is our deal maker in chief. We secured a historic agreement to establish the United States-Ukraine Reconstruction Investment Fund. This is a first of its kind economic partnership for the reconstruction and long-term economic success of Ukraine that the United States will greatly benefit from. This partnership represents the United States taking an economic stake in securing a free, peaceful, and sovereign future for Ukraine. This partnership establishes a fund that will receive 50% of royalties, license fees, and other similar payments from natural resource projects in Ukraine. President Trump has been clear from the beginning. He wants the killing in this brutal war to end. This agreement shows how invested the president is in securing a truly lasting peace.
So Carolyn Leavitt from the podium today talking more about efforts that this administration is the deal maker in chief. That's the way to summarize everything he's done. Everything he's done is based on deal making. He's not flexing the American military power against our enemies, although it's on the table. Everybody knows that that's on the table, but that's not where he's going with it. Economically, from a foreign policy standpoint, from a border security standpoint, and the way he has said to Mexico, like, you're going to help with this. And so the amount of people, I remember hearing this during the Tom Homan Monday press briefing, the amount of people who are being detained in Mexico before they ever get here. At the cabinet meeting yesterday, Kristi Noem was talking about deportations and the deportations of this administration compared to the deportations of the Biden administration and the ones preceding it. And Kristi Noem said this, and I thought, no, not really. But she said, we should count as Trump deportations the people that Mexico has apprehended that haven't even crossed the border yet, because that's a result of Donald Trump's policy. So if you were measuring, if you were trying to measure apples to apples, Biden deported this many people, Trump only deported this many people. If you're keeping, I'm making up a number, 75% of the people don't actually get into the country because Mexico stops them. If you're trying to get an apples to apples number of people who are not in this country because of Donald Trump's policies, I understand what Secretary Noem is saying, because if they didn't ever get here because Donald Trump worked it out with the Mexican president to say, hey, we need you to not let these people cross the southern border. And the Mexican president said, OK, we'll help you with that. That's how you put policies in place that actually solve what? The problem. And which problem? The security problem for the American people. Not a political talking point problem where people will say, oh, well, Joe Biden deported so many more people than Donald Trump. I don't even know what you're talking about him with. I thought he was going to deport more people. They're going to take numbers, a statistic, completely reframe that matter, serve it up in a 3-minute MSNBC interview about how the president isn't deporting nearly as many people as he said he was going to. And it's going to be because, as you, he, every time the president says what percentage the border is closed, he adds a nine. 99.9%. 99.99%. During the prayer celebration or whatever that they just had at the White House, it was three nines. 99.999. And then he goes, that's like, we let three people in. I'm here for it. I think it's funny. But we're getting back to substance. And the only way that this works from a policy based point, the only way that this works is if the American people aren't lapdogs just slurping up everything spoon fed to them by the mainstream media. Because the mainstream media can frame the deportations of the Biden administration, just the number, against the deportations of the Trump administration. Leave out the fact that the border is 99.9999% closed now, or secure, I should say. And the fact that we're not deporting people as much as Joe Biden did in these last weeks here, when it's been super secure on the border, means that there are more or less people to find and turn around and to say, go back home. They're not coming here. That's a policy-based solution that actually looks at a real problem that American taxpayers and voters and families are facing. And the Trump administration is out there securing that border, making good on the promise that they said that they would do. And you'll get the people who can't stand that Donald Trump is having this kind of success because of all of the issues that the Trump administration has solved or made incredible progress on in the first 100 days. Joe Biden himself said he cannot secure the border without Congress. He told us that he can't do it by himself. He doesn't have the executive authority to do it. He wanted to push what? The bipartisan bill in Congress that was not bipartisan at all. The Republicans who supported it at the beginning did not support it when it came time to pass it. All he wanted was a talking point. All of that was just to get a political talking point that Republicans have the opportunity to vote for real immigration and border immigration reform and border security, and they won't play ball. And so he left the border wide open, so much so that almost immediately Donald Trump came in and with his executive authority actually secured the border. He didn't need Congress to do that. He doesn't need any congressional help to keep the border the way it is right now until he's not in office anymore. And then the next person can come in and use the executive authority that the Biden administration was too lame to try to do because they didn't want border security. They wanted border insecurity because that was Democratic Party security. And they've been banking on that for decades. And before everybody gets to the point where you're starting to think, oh, they're just importing votes. It's not even about votes, folks. It's not about bringing all these people and turning them into Democrat voters. It's about influencing the next census. And they had to do it right now because the next census is in about 5 years from now. And when they go through that census, if they can place these immigrants in our country in places where they can transform the congressional map, then they can influence their balance of power in Washington, D.C. And if they figure 50.1% of those people will vote Democrat, then it's a net gain for them no matter what. That's why they needed a scapegoat. Oh, the bipartisan bill. The Republicans won't support it. All that did was streamline the process of letting people in our country. It sent more agents to the border to be paper pushers. Look at the recruiting numbers. Look at the people who are trying to sign up right now to work in our ICE offices, in our law enforcement offices, in our military offices, who know that there's an actual mission that is America first that will help make America safe again. And the people who have the sense of mind to understand that there are bad guys and that there are good guys, and they want to make sure they protect the good guys from the bad guys, want to be back in a position to do that. They didn't under Joe Biden. Joe Biden turned all of our law enforcement and military operations into DEI factories, and nobody wanted to be involved in it anymore. None of this functions. None of the Trump successes would be believable as successes if the American people still trusted the agenda-driven media, and they don't. That's how you know that the successes have made it through to the mainstream people, to the voters, wherever they're getting their news from, which is probably a social media feed somewhere. That mainstream media can no longer create a narrative and an agenda to disparage a man, a president, with whatever story that they want to concoct to try to take him down. And it doesn't matter if it's true, if they can get the results that they want in time before the investigations and the truth comes out. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Congresswoman Mary Miller. I interviewed her in Washington, D.C., in her office. And we talked about the 100 days. We talked about families. We talked about Illinois. And you're going to get to listen to that interview coming up next. You can watch us with on the Annie Fry YouTube channel as well. You'll be able to see that interview. And you can come vote in today's YouTube poll. How do you feel about Trump's handling of Canada? You love it, you hate it, or you're indifferent? Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand. Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
everything baseball, all season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Back fresh from Washington, D.C. Got to sleep in my own bed last night. That was lovely. There's nothing like sleeping in your own bed.
Mm-hmm. With my little mini fridge next to it. You guys do that, right? What?
Mini
What do you have in there? Is it milk?
No, I don't have milk in there. I have water. I have some of my medicine in there. Makes it real easy to just roll over in the middle of the night, get a drink.
Does it have to be refrigerated?
Yes. So that's a good excuse to have it.
If you didn't have, when are you supposed to take that medicine?
Either morning or evening. So it's always
If
nice.
You didn't have refrigerated medicine, would you still have the setup?
I would say no, because that was the origination of it. But now, if I got cured of that disease and didn't need the medicine, I would still always have the fridge. Once you go back.
Yeah, I understand that. That's just funny. That's pretty funny.
It's a perfect nightstand.
You have
it's water, medicine,
and what?
Water, medicine. That's pretty much the main things. I'll keep a little something in there every now and then to eat.
Like a chocolate bar?
Yeah, I mean, like a sausage. One of those that you keep in the fridge.
No. I don't know what that is.
Some crackers, sausage, and cheese. I'm not saying all the time.
Is it cooked?
I used to. No, no. I mean, it's those ones you slice up. Once in a while, usually around New Year's, I keep a whole thing of pickled herring in there.
Okay. That's.
It's mainly water and medicine, though.
Do you keep pickled herring in there? Do you eat pickled herring?
Sometimes. The problem is I always forget that I have food in there.
It's like woman's dream to come into a man's bedroom and be like, what do you got in your fridge? I got some herring.
Yeah. got some clothes on the floor and some herring in the fridge.
Congresswoman Mary Miller and I sat down for an interview in her office. I have to edit the video a little bit more than I thought that I already did, so we're going to get back to that. I'll probably air that at about 2:00, 2:05.
On Tuesday... you were not here yet. We played back the interview that you did with Eric Schmidt. We got a lot of really good feedback on that interview.
Yeah.
And it's weird to say that you should see it because you were there.
Because I was there.
But you should, obviously being there, it's different. Like being a consumer of the interview, mm-hmm. I wonder what you would think.
All right. Should we listen to it again?
If we can pull it up quick.
Yeah, I think I got it here.
Okay. Well, Eric Schmidt and I sat down. Senator Eric Schmidt, of course, I refer to him as my adopted senator. Maybe in Illinois we'll get a senator that we can brag about, whoever replaces Dick Durbin. I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'm waiting to hear some names. There's a couple names that I've heard that I am excited about, but we'll see as we get closer if those individuals decide to announce. But Senator Eric Schmidt sat down, and I kind of set this up the last time in a way that I want you to understand. When I go and I sat down with him, I wanted to have an interview that wasn't like every other interview you're going to hear him do on Fox News or News Nation or CNN if he goes on there or wherever. I know that you're listening here. Most of you, over half of you are listening here, and he is your elected official in the Senate. And I think it's important to understand who those people are as individuals and not just as like politicians that are sometimes from our end seem robotic, that they're real people. So we sat down and we had this conversation.
So we are sitting in Senator Eric Schmidt's office. And as I was saying, my adopted Senator Eric Schmidt, thank you for the time today.
Glad to have you as an adopted constituent and then here in the swamp, I guess. Right?
How much different is it? I don't know how often you've been coming to Washington, D.C. outside of course, being the Attorney General for the state of Missouri. How familiar does Washington, D.C. feel for you compared to St. Louis, Missouri?
It's a foreign land. I really had not spent much time in D.C. at all because I was in state politics and Attorney General. We would come here for... a big announcement or maybe some meetings or something when I was AG, but very much kind of like you were here, maybe for a day or two and then you went back. So being here this amount of time, I think, is new. And when I was sworn in, 2 years ago, I think I'd only been in the Capitol one time in my whole life.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so you get sworn.
Did you take a tour?
Yeah. It literally took a while to figure out where the bathrooms were. But my whole family came up, and it was just a really special day, the swearing in and all that, and, you know, being sworn in as the 2,000th senator of all time on the dot, which
really?
Was kind of interesting.
So,
you know, being here now for a couple of years, you certainly know your way around a little bit more, and then being in the majority now has certainly changed things from my first 2 years. But I love this job, but I go back and forth every week. So
I was going to say, I see you travel a lot. Yeah. You go back to see your family.
Yeah.
I see you participating in your kids' events. I can't help but reflect when I'm here, I have four kids, about what the lifestyle is and the demand of what you have to do to serve the people of the state of Missouri and balance that with the family. How do you do it?
That's the hardest part is, you know, my kids are, I have Steven who's 20 and special needs. I've talked about that a bunch. And then a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old daughter. So the most important job I'll ever have is being Jamie's husband and my kid's dad. So you just try to balance it all. So when I'm home, I'm like volleyball dad for Olivia and you know, helping Sophia with projects. She's a junior in high school. So I love that. And so I get up here as close to the first vote as I can on Monday, and then when we're done at the end of the week, I get back as fast as I can. So.
All right, let me ask you a dad question. You said it's the most important thing you do, and I'm saying this from personal experience. Last week, kid is late on getting a project done. They need a late night trip to Walmart to get a poster board or something like that. Are you the dad that stays up and cares about that final grade and are gonna help make that come to fruition? Or is that like life lesson time?
No, I mean, I would help. I mean, I don't know if that's a weakness or a strength. I don't really
know.
I don't really know.
Because I'm like, the grade matters. You need
yes.
But at the same time, I'm like,
Yeah, I think, so I will help, but then there's a lesson that comes with that too. It's like, hey, you can't wait till the last minute on these things. Knowing, by the way, that, I'm sure I did that a bunch. And then even as a practicing lawyer, I mean, deadlines exist because you know, that's the deadline, and usually kind of wait until you get close to the deadline because the other thing's going on. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just try to be as present for them as possible. And I'm actually coming now to the very weird realization that, you know, my time with them in the house, at least the two girls, is limited.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be long before.
That's heavy.
It is. And, I when they're young, you don't really, I didn't at least think about it in those terms. And so you just try to make the most of it. And I try to, talk to them about what I do, but also try to, I don't make this job like everything at home. Like I can't do it. I watch Cardinal games and get around and visit with people. But I think you got to make sure that they know that they're your priority when you're there.
Yeah.
And so being present with them is really important to me. And I try not to like inundate their life with the political. I want them to have as normal of a life as possible. And they've done a really good job with it. It's funny. They see the ads and all that stuff when you're running, and you don't really know how they're going to react to that. But
how do they react to it?
Well, they call them hate commercials, and they they would say, "Dad, there's a lot of hate commercials about you right now."
Yeah.
But I'm their dad, and that's how they see me, and that's how I want them to see me. And so, you know, we have just normal dad-daughter conversations, and it's not really about this other stuff. So.
I think I get a little bit of that from being a public figure in the news media, that people don't like something I said, then they make a deal out of it, or my husband can be a little more worked up about it than my kids, but they're old enough now too that they see some of it. And I just think it's another opportunity to teach your kids that, listen, not everyone's gonna like you, but what do you stand for? And if you stand for something, they're gonna be people who feel differently. And some people don't handle it well.
Yeah, and that's just kind of the deal. And you do things for the right reasons and make good decisions. And then, and I think honestly, my time as Attorney General probably really drove that point home for me from a leadership perspective, because these were the COVID times, and it was just sort of like you still look back and you can't believe they're boarding up basketball hoops and.
Yeah.
You know, putting police tape around playgrounds.
Yeah.
And for me, I felt like even in the face of a lot of pressure to do otherwise, you know, on the mask mandates or the vaccine mandates. I mean, we really led the charge on that. And at the time, if you go back in time, that was controversial. And now everybody kind of, most people still see it for what it was. Yeah. But that, I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned there. I also think, just as a dad, you get people, there's the good and the bad, and you get people that certainly I appreciate, say hello and thanks. And I think, just handling yourself in those situations, because the kids, they're always watching, right? And so making sure you say thank you, and waiters and waitresses are yes sir and yes ma'am, and those are just, that's how I was brought up, and those are the kind of lessons I want to teach them. And well, it has nothing to do with politics,
way more important than politics. Yeah. Politics is so much downstream. I know we have limited time with you, so I want to talk to you about the 100 days mark for the president's administration. You've served under a Biden administration, and you've served under a Trump administration. And, you know, I was at the press briefing this morning.
Congrats, by the way. That's kind of
wow.
Neat.
Yeah. That was wild. And Secretary Bessent was there. And if I had the opportunity to ask the question, I was going to ask him about the American dream, because I think boomers and the greatest generation had this idea of an American dream. Something changed. I was born in the 80s. I'm in my 40s now. I think that if the Trump administration gets the tax cuts made permanent, the DOGE cuts and spending reined in made permanent, and if the tariffs work out the way he says they're going to work out, that there's kind of a revival of an American dream that I don't think that millennials like me, I don't think they think about the American dream.
Yeah.
You think that the president is on his way to doing that?
I do. And I'm 49, so that's Gen X. That's what I want for my kids, right? Like what we were talking about for this most of this interview so far.
Yeah.
It's really our kids and making sure they have a bright future ahead, they can achieve things. And I do think that's what this administration was all about. I think seeing the previous 4 years, the direction we were headed, there's a reason why President Trump won the popular vote. There's a reason why he swept those battleground states, because he was talking about things that really resonated with real people. The bubble up here, the things that are like top of mind, it's generally not the case. When I go back home, people are not having the same conversations that they are here, I keep that with me. I think that fuels me every day to be that voice for the people in Missouri, like this common sense agenda. And that's what this is. So look, whether it's energy policy, no country in the history of the world has ever declared war on their own domestic energy supply. That's what Joe Biden did. No country really in the history of the world has opened up their border to just anybody, unvetted, 15 million people here illegally. It was crazy. And I think what happened was these people who were generally writing white papers found their way into key decision-making positions in the Biden White House, and President Otto Penn was just, he wanted to kind of have a legacy as the next FDR. I mean, he talked about this, and it was the most radical administration we've ever seen. So really what President Trump is doing, I think it's hitting a reset. You've got these tax cuts that we need to make permanent. That would be a $4 trillion tax increase if we don't do that. He ran on that. He talked about energy. And also on trade policy, the reality is, after World War II, we had priorities. We wanted Western Europe and Japan to get back on their feet. So we were determined to beat Soviet communism. So they had certain advantages in trade deals and sort of things that we allowed to take place so that ultimately we would win the Cold War. After the Cold War, though, nothing changed. Those still unfair trade practices that inhibit our markets, our goods and their markets still exist. No president has had the courage to stand up and say, you know what? Treat us fairly.
Yeah.
This is an outdated model. And I think when we do that, the net of all of this is going to be these trade barriers and unfair trade practices that other countries have just sort of done and gotten away with, they're going to come down. And so you've got energy policy, you've got regulatory reform, you've got trade policy and energy policy. All that stuff will matter for real people. There have been 90,000 factories that have left since NAFTA. Yeah. And so I just think of the community that I grew up in, North St. Louis County. You know, it was very blue collar, overwhelmingly Democrat, by the way. These are just working folks that wanted a better life, and those jobs were gone.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity, I think, to bring some of those back and for more people in the working class, middle class, to share in the American dream.
Yeah.
Some of the really wealthy folks, they've had a good run, and it's just time, I think, for regular people, normal people, to have an opportunity. And you saw that in President Trump's first term, right? Mm-hmm. You saw wage, inflation-adjusted wage increases were higher than they've ever been, and I think we're going to get back to that.
Well, Senator Eric Schmidt, I'm very grateful for your time. And, you know, as we started this interview talking about our families and our kids, it's all about the future,
yeah.
And it's great to have a president that has an administration that is thinking about the future and, like you said, has the guts to do it, and senators like you who, in the majority, are helping get that done. So thank you so much.
Hey, it's been fun.
I really appreciate
Good to see
it.
You in person again.
So that was the conversation I had with Senator Eric Schmidt in his office. What an awesome experience in Missouri. Good grief. Well done on picking a real, I think that he would not mind me saying this, a real dude to represent you in the Senate. You can tell the people who have been in D.C. for quite some time. The people who are kind of, they start to, what am I thinking? There's some movie or something where people like start to be actually a physical part of their environment. Oh. Like they like grow into it, or it grows over them or something. Do you know what I'm talking
Pirates
about?
Pirates of the Caribbean. They
yeah,
became part
it's,
of the ship.
It's, what is that ship called?
The, oh.
Yo.
I was thinking of an 80s horror movie. So.
Same thing. Davy Jones Locker.
Yeah.
That's D.C.
The Flying Dutchman is the ship.
There you go. The Flying Dutchman. Thanks, guys. That is not Eric Schmidt. That's not the way he is. He is attached to home. He's detached from D.C. He comes to bring some of Missouri into D.C., not to bring some of D.C. back to Missouri. And I just think that's great.
I asked you a long, wandering, pointless question that was attempting to ask that question on Tuesday.
Yeah,
it was like about the swamp and about like seeing people there and versus here and all that stuff. And
should we go back and play?
You at the end of it, you go, "What was the question?"
Oh,
I was like, "Well, it's kind of about that."
I'm not gonna lie. When you were asking that question, that might have been one of the times where Apple Music just randomly opened and one of three songs I have on there was blaring in my
darn
ear.
Right. It wasn't me.
I mean,
it was you.
I would not say this if it wasn't true. I don't. It might not have been you. Let's take a quick break. We're going to hear from Congresswoman Mary Miller. We should have Tyrus at 1:05, but sometimes his schedule conflicts, and we always say, you know, just let us know at that moment. We're always happy to have him when he is available to us. So we hope to connect with Tyrus at the beginning of the 1 o'clock hour. Jill Concha is with us at 1:25, and his book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, which I am halfway through, I need you to get it right now. You need to get that book before his interview starts, because this is the read that you've been wanting. This is just pure joy in a book. And if you get the audiobook like I did, Joe will read it to you. All right. Are we going to do Wiggins America when we come back? Or are we going to punt?
We're
going to
wait. We're going to wait.
So just to tease people, Wiggins America is going to be in the 1 o'clock hour, if not 2:05, but probably 1:40. And it is about?
How to survive an alien invasion.
Okay.
Whether you have the capabilities.
Notes?
Oh, no, this is multiple articles, not just one. This is multiple sources.
Did you write all of them?
Yes.
They're
all from Odyssey.
This is like what BuzzFeed did to get the Russian dossier
into a real story.
Yeah, write an article and then have somebody report on the article and say sources say.
I source this from KFTK St. Louis.
Before you know it, you could be impeached, Ryan. We'll be right back. You remind me. This is how you remind me of what I really am. Nickelback fan, are you love it, indifferent, or hate it? Like today's YouTube poll about Trump's handling of Canada.
I would say I'm still borderline hate it, but I'm becoming indifferent to it.
And you hate it because that's what everybody does.
No, I hate it because it's Nickelback.
Nickelback, what everybody says.
When it's new music, you have to judge it based on what it is in the moment.
Do they have new music?
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm becoming indifferent because it's older. It's because I don't care as much. When it was new, I hated it, and I still feel that hate
Brad?
Now, but it's just reminiscent.
Kind of like them. I wouldn't say they're my favorite, but I kind of like them.
So you're on the like, you're on,
yeah,
you're,
I would
on
mean like.
You're on the entering love it side, and Ryan's on the exiting hate it side.
Yeah.
I love it. It makes me think about high school.
That's why I hate it, because it makes me think about the moment in time when I hated it.
That's weird. Let's see here. I want to play for some. You know, sometimes the folks, they just do our job for us. We don't even really have much to add to it. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett doing Jasmine Crockett things.
As far as I'm concerned, you randomly kidnapping folk and you throwing them out of the country against their civil rights, against their constitutional rights. And frankly, how would they feel if some other country decided that they were going to just start throwing people randomly in our country? Like, that is absolutely insane. So, yes, all I got to say is y'all need to get these fools out of here. But I'm going to...
Wait, what? Whoa, wow. Couple of turns there.
Is she a closeted Republican?
Y'all need to get these people out of here. She concludes.
That is, quote, insane, end quote.
All right.
Just in case. But just in case you didn't quite catch that.
As far as I'm concerned, you randomly kidnapping folk and you throwing them out of the country against their civil rights, against...
Hold on. This is where it gets real good.
Their constitutional rights. And frankly, how would they feel if some other country decided that they were going to just start throwing people randomly in our country? Like, that is absolutely insane.
Preach it, sister!
Now, was she live when she posted this?
This is a selfie.
Or did she record this and then think, boy, that was really good? Because that's an extra filter that you could have stopped it there, you know? This is one of those videos that a lot of times you come back out of something like this and you go, now, let's frame this up and realize the argument that she's making. You don't even need to do that.
I have enough respect for our listeners to not explain it any more than she already kind of laid it out there.
Yeah,
for
you
us.
Don't have to.
She says it like this. She goes, frankly, I'm like, thanks for giving it to us straight there, Congresswoman.
I would give her a little bit of a Midwest ope if she had not, if that had been live, that she just said, oh shoot, oh well.
Of
I
which
made a
she
bad
should
point.
Be familiar because she is from here, you right. know, Pride of St. Louis. maybe Tyrus, when we come back. If so, I'm going to ask him about Tim Walz saying that he was named the vice presidential candidate so he could code talk to white dudes. Tyrus, hopefully you're with us next. If not, we've got Mary Miller coming up as well.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now. And what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.